Hey there, oh there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that won't post Takahata 101 selfies. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today's another one of those lazy episodes where the topic of discussion floats all accidental-like on the breeze. Yeah, it's another junk drawer episode in the shed, but what better place for a junk drawer than the shed? But first the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
Actually, that's pretty clever. I like that. Well done.
First intro that Mark actually likes. We're starting this podcast on a high note.
I mean, there's been intros that I've liked and intros that genuinely, you know, like while I'm muted over here, I giggle like a schoolgirl.
Mute button's your friend in that case.
Yeah, like I always think that, you know, whenever it is that you have someone leading the show, that it should always be, you know, like everyone else muted affair. Like it's, you know, like you're walking out onto the stage. And the curtains are drawing backwards to your panel of people who, you know, it's just me in most cases, unless Bill happens to be here.
Or Lachlan, by the way, we miss you, buddy.
Yeah, really, we need to get Lach back on the show. We need to get Bill back. We need to have, you know, more guests. Like, we need to do more episodes of Tool Shed a month, but...
First and foremost, let's get more episodes out, and then we'll worry about getting... Oh, look, fucking Linkara's here, I guess. What are you doing here, Linkara?
Yeah, we gotta get down to that whole making more episodes a month thing, but you know what? It's the pleasantries that hint you into why it is that there aren't more episodes a month, because everything's always going wrong. Like, I'll tell you how my day's going today.
Let alone the last 2 weeks since we posted another episode of Tool Shed.
Oh, God. So I'm currently running on two NVIDIA GTX 770s, which up until this morning, I was running on one. Really, up until about 2 hours ago, I was running on one. I went out to Micro Center. This entire time, because we're working on this project, and we need power! And, now that the 700 series is extinct, what is most often happening with extinct series of GeForce cards is that Bitcoin miners and cheap-ass gamers are fucking buying them up. And the 700 series is already extinct. Like, it's, you know, you find one in the wild, like, it's kind of... Wow. Tiger is sold out, Newegg is sold out, Micro Center is becoming increasingly sold out. I don't know what Fry's numbers are, but I'm sure that they're not fucking holding up too well. And so for the last week and a half, since there was a sale at Micro Center on them, I said, okay, so next paycheck, that's where it's going, to get a secondary 770 to kind of strap to my current one for SLI. And I was just like, oh my God, these two cards are going to disappear. They're going to disappear. And I wake up and it's payday and I'm like, awesome. Yay. And I go out to the car and the remote starts not working. And then I hit the door unlock and the doors won't unlock. I haven't had an abundance of places to go in the last couple of weeks. So I haven't been starting Molly up.
And this is Snowpocageddon? You live in the middle of Snowpocageddon?
Yeah, I mean, granted, you know, it's like, I'm not going to say living in Philadelphia that I got it as bad as someone living, you know, further north, because you guys got it bad. For the most part, we've just been getting dustings, so I haven't even had to touch a shovel yet this year, and thank Christ for that. So, car won't start. I borrow my neighbor's jump box, which is never charged, ever. Nothing. Then I borrow my other neighbor's jump box, nothing. Get him to roll his truck over, do a hard jump, still nothing. So pretty much my battery is frozen dead. So I need to bring it in the house, thaw it out, and then go buy a jump charger or go buy a floating charger, which is $30 that I most certainly didn't feel like spending on, because floating chargers are really stupid as a singular device because you don't use them more than once. Like, because you only ever have one battery. If you had like two batteries, like one for emergencies, then a float charger is the best thing in the world because it just kind of keeps one battery charged in the house in case shit happens. But when you're a one battery person, which 99% of people are one battery persons, including the engineer, then it's a waste of $30. Like you're almost better served just going out, spending the extra money on a Duralast yellow top and then calling it a day. Bennett obviously don't know what a yellow top is. Yellow and red top batteries are like severe condition batteries. Like, I can drive this to the North Pole, leave it out there for a week and it'll be fine.
Well, just because I live in the middle of, oh, it's a balmy 70 degrees out in February, doesn't mean that I'm not hip to the lingo. It just means I never had to use them.
Uh-huh. Sure. And on behalf of all the people who do have to shovel snow, you can eat a big, fat dick.
Listen, at least you could take a shower for as long as you want. If I take a shower for longer than 5 minutes, the police are going to come in with mag lights and just crack me over the skull.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I do like the ability to take long showers. I don't, but I like that ability. So, I go out to Micro Center, fearing that these cards are gone, but stock says they're there. Okay, look on the shelf, they're not there. My process is always look for it first, then bother somebody. So I bother someone, and all of my friends don't work at Micro Center anymore. They're all gone. So I have to bother someone that I don't know, which is even worse. And it's 8 o'clock. They're closing in an hour. And we came to the final conclusion that these two cards grew legs and walked away. Could not find them in the front, in the back, in the warehouse, behind the customer service counter, nowhere. So instead of getting two in penny, because I prefer to say penny as opposed to PNY just because I think it sounds cute. But as opposed to getting two penny cards or getting the one penny card that I had set out to get, I ended up with an MSI card. And I didn't want the MSI card because even though it was $10 cheaper, it looks like a rickety piece of shit. But it's in my rig right now and it's working, so I can't really complain.
But who knows how long that's going to last?
I don't know, but I've got 29 days to buy the extended warranty on it.
You know, that's always a gamble. My mother's always been like, get the extended warranty, get the extended warranty. And then, like, she buys it, and then, like, it never breaks within the time frame of that extended warranty. It's like, wow. You know, it's nice to know that if it did break, you would have that warranty to fall back on, but it didn't, so you ostensibly bought $50 for nothing.
You know what? It's 30 to 50 bucks that, you know, like, it depends. Like, if it's a hard-wearing device, like a TV, if it's a TV, a game system, a graphics card, a motherboard, like something ridiculously expensive that is on all the time, I say buy the warranty. But they'll try and fucking sell you PRPs for anything. Like, you bought a Snickers bar. Do you want a PRP for that? No. No, I don't. My body has a PRP for that. Trust me. And I'm not going to want it once I get it back.
Listen, if we start putting a PRP for comestibles, then Taco Bell is going to go down in flames. So, hey, want to put a PRP on this taco not giving you the taco shits? So, yeah, here's the $10. 3 hours later. Yeah, I want my money back. And my $10 back.
Yeah, and pain and suffering. Give me some churros.
Can I pat myself on the back for using the word comestibles right?
You can, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's yet another technically I win today. I win today, but it doesn't feel like a win because I had to settle.
I don't know. Like, you win because you got what you needed. Not what you wanted, but what you needed.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely not going to go in the list of horrible fucking failures that has been my life in the last 4 months. But, you know, it'll do. Like, as a win, like, I guess even if by the smallest margin it can be called a win, it'll do.
Well, considering how the year before began and how this year has begun, it's already begun on a lighter note, hasn't it?
I don't know. That depends on what you're fucking talking about.
I'm just talking about trying to remember this time last year. I think you were fairly frustrated because that was when our project started and you were still kind of like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to do this.
Well, yeah, but that's the start of any project where you're completely fucking ill-equipped to do, you know, what it is that you're doing.
What did I get myself into?
And I promise that when we finally reveal this, it'll, like, all of these episodes of Tool Shed where we're like, the project, it's frustrating. Why do we need so much power? Why do we need more equipment? Like, it's all going to make sense.
Once you finally see it. And I am as excited and as anxious to release the news about it as much as you are, Mark. But, God, how long have we been sitting on this? I think we've been
more than a year, because it started on the 14th of December.
Well, that's where we started, you know, like, working on it. But that's, you know, like, when was the first time we ever even hinted at it? Like, I think like a half a year went by before we even hinted that we were working something under the wraps.
Well, yeah, because there's that fear of, you know, there's always going to be that fear of, like, you know, everything could fall flat. Like, the whole thing could just explode in our faces, and then we've got nothing. Like, that's why there's no announcement trailer. That's why there's no posts about it on the website. That's why there's nothing. Because right now everything is real. But in the last few months, things have only been varying shades of real. So, like, until everything is absolutely solid, and it's, you know, because we're beyond the point of no return now. But even so, like, with the money and the time invested and everything else, it's just kind of like once, you know, like, once the announcement trailer goes out, you know, like, that's it. Can't get it back.
I mean, not even a teaser poster, which, which, by the by, I've always felt very iffy on it. Like, it's an image teasing over something. It barely tells you anything.
Yeah, it just tells you, like, this thing might exist. But there's plenty of teaser posters for shit that never came out. And then plenty of teaser posters for shit that came out that nobody liked, like Daikatana.
Man, we were talking about that a little earlier, about this new series that Double Fine had made. It's basically Let's Plays, but the twist is they're talking with game developers.
Which means that they're actually fucking interesting.
Oh, well, me and him, we kind of split on this. I find that the people who are playing the game that are actually entertaining to hear, I can let slide. I really don't like the Markipliers. I freaking do not like PewDiePie. I do not like him at all, but I do like...
And that's not to say that there isn't anything to like about Let's Plays, but me personally, like, I grew up playing games, so I will play games. I don't want to watch somebody else play a fucking game. I'll play the game. I don't need, like, it's the same thing for whenever it is that I go into a store and they don't have the thing I'm looking for, and they say, well, would you like us to special to order it for you? No, because I can go home, get on the internet, and order it for myself.
You know, that being said, there is something about, like you said, like, you're just sitting on your couch and just hanging out with your friends, and then, you know, the whole appeal of Let's Plays is that you are like a fly on the wall while they're, you know, on the couch just enjoying themselves. And, you know, like, and that's where the personality and the humor can really draw an attention. Like, my favorite Let's Players are the Inside Gaming crew, who unfortunately left the Machinima Network. I'm not sure what they're up to now, but I'm excited for what they're going to be doing in the future. But to the topic at hand, though, this Double Fine had done a Let's Play of Doom, was it?
Yeah, they did it with Romero.
And that became so interesting to me because I, like everyone else who was alive during that era, remembers that infamous ad, John Romero's about to make you his bitch. And I asked him, like, point blankly, did they talk about that?
And he does, and he talks about it nonchalantly. It's not a point of shame, because apparently there's still servers running Daikatana Deathmatch, so it's not, it's cult. And there's nothing wrong with cult, but, you know, just to remind, cult is not success. Cult just means that you've earned your place in the great quilt of geek, but you only inhabit one patch, you know?
And... that's important to remember, but I guess what I'm trying to ask is, like, he approaches it nonchalantly, but did he actually talk about, like, what was his thinking behind it,
because the entire thing was about Doom. Like, it was Doom focused, it was level design focused, it was, you know, the difficulties in development and how that eventually translated into Quake, and it's fascinating. Like, it goes on forever because Romero plays through all of Doom. which is, you know, it's good background noise, but, you know, like, if you actually do want to bother to, like, watch it, it's just as good to listen to it as it is to watch. I highly recommend it.
And it's a shame that this doesn't appear in more games, because you could easily have, like, a commentary track running over, like, after you beat a game, there would be a commentary track over certain aspects of levels or during cinematics that you could trigger. And I think that's a missed opportunity, especially in an age of collector's editions and re-releases that seem to be happening at the beginning of a console cycle.
Well, collector's editions tend to be more bullshit than anything these days. Like, honestly, Bungie really cornered the market on the collector's edition, because Legendary was always the version to have. Before it was Legendary, and then when it was the Halo 2 limited edition, because you got an entire fucking DVD full of stuff. You know, like, things that you might, as a Halo fan, find interesting, as a gamer find interesting, as someone who wants to be in the industry of gaming find interesting. Like, there was just, and they managed to repeat this over and over again to talk about games and development and the community and, you know, integrating Rooster Teeth stuff. And, you know, like, Bungie really had it down. And I really don't think the 343's got the thunder for that yet.
They just don't have, I don't think they have the drive, nor do they have the incentive, especially when you consider that, like you said, it's like the collector's edition was the edition to have. So why would you even make a regular edition if only to split profits?
Yeah, like, I don't care about fucking armor sets. I don't care about extra weapons on day one. I don't care about any of that shit. What I really find deeply fascinating is how the game is made. You know, like tell me what this 3 to 5 years of your life was like, and all the things that happened in between. You know, like, those are the things that I find really deeply interesting, which is why it is that it kind of kills me with Korra, because I can't buy Korra on Blu-ray yet, because season 4 is not out yet on Blu-ray, and the commentaries are only on the Blu-ray, because that's the only fucking way they could actually put worth into the Blu-ray release.
What are you gonna do? I was reminded of that immediately, because I recently got Saints Row re-elected, and it came with a DLC for something called Enter the Dominatrix, which was, if you follow the timeline of development between Saints Row 3 and Saints Row 4, was that Enter the Dominatrix was supposed to be a DLC pack for Saints Row 3, but the more they worked on it, the more they realized, like, this is getting really out of hand. You know, this might not work as DLC, but you know what it could work as? A sequel to Saints Row 3. So let's make it as Saints Row 4.
Okay, first off, I don't want any team lead in any company who constantly talks out of the side of his mouth like that for that long a period of time. I mean, that is even that. I mean, I know that that's just, you know, the good old fashioned Patton Oswalt delivery.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something wholesale unrealistic about, like, a person who just talks like this all the time. I'd like a number 5 and make that large with a Big Mac on the side. You know, like they're just constantly ashamed of everything they say.
Well, he's working on Saints Row. How can he not be embarrassed a little bit?
Because he's swimming in fat stacks of cash.
He's making a game where one of the weapons is a gigantic purple dildo bat,
which everybody considers to be normal now. You know, when the trailer came out, we thought it was hilarious. But now it's just, yeah, there's a gigantic purple dildo bat in it, so.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
But Keith David exists in this space.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting about what the DLC pack wound up being was they treated it like every character inside the game were actors trying to talk about, oh god, this DLC pack was doomed from the start. We didn't know what we were doing. And you played basically these broken up levels that were finished, but weren't completed to form a full arc of a story. Mm-hmm. So they would be broken up by, like, these animatics of what these, you know, what the cinematics would look like that would connect these little gameplay segments. And it's all patched together with this, like, an interview segment between, you know, like, the video game characters, like, oh god, we were supposed to be here doing a bunch of side quests, and it was really lame. All these fetch quests and escort quests, it's like, what were they thinking? And it was a really novel way of approaching, like, DLC or extra content that just wound up on the cutting room floor. It's like, well, we have this amount of segment completed work, it's playable, but there's just nothing to connect them to.
Yeah, but see, now it sets this awful precedent because all it's going to do is embolden Gearbox to release Duke Nukem Forever Ever, where there's a commentary track that just is Pitchford constantly saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Now, look at me in a straight face. If they sold that for $19.99, wouldn't you want to play it? Just to hear the nightmare stories about, like, oh, God, I don't know what the fuck 3D Realms was thinking.
Maybe. I mean, there have been good games that have come out for $20. Evil Dead Regeneration, that came out at $20. Deadpool came out at $40. you know, like that would be more of a joke than anything. Like if they released Duke Nukem Forever Ever as a,
it's like a $20 expansion pack or something like that.
Yeah, that comes with a commentary of everybody just shitting on 3D Realms and what were they thinking. Or, you know what? I would pay full retail for that DLC if it was John St. John completely lit. Reading hate mail.
It's like, dear 3D Realms, John St. John is a horrible actor. Why do you keep hiring him as Duke Nukem? Anyone could do the Duke Nukem voice. Well, fuck you, Jeremy. You can literally hear him light up a cigar in the sound booth like he's Tony J.
I mean, honestly, man, like, John is such an awesome fucking guy that I really do think that more cons need to have him, just because I really do think he sells out a con all by himself.
I don't know. Like, I don't think that worked. I don't think that's true anymore. Not since, you know.
The thing is, though, is that he's like fucking Goodman, you know, where, like, you forget about Goodman and then Goodman has this renaissance in the middle of his career and he's awesome again. And John St. John has reinvented himself as the single most awesome con guest in the history of ever.
Because he
shows up fucking he's drunk at midnight panels. He, you know, and then he's hungover in the panel they force him to do in the morning. and all the time in between, he's the most awesome, jovial, shake anybody's hand, talk to anybody candidly sort of guy. And I think that we need more voice actors like that on the circuit. You know, like there's enough people who are, you know, who are safe, who are Boy Scoutly, and it's like, you know, like, oh, thank you for saying that this shit sucks that I was in and worked really hard on. It's like, no, I want for John to single-handedly be the consequence of being a shitty person to voice over people. It's like, oh, did you think that it was a good idea for you to be a heckler in the middle of this voiceover panel? Fine, here's what we're going to do. We're going to fucking hijack you and stick you in this room all by yourself with John St. John. And he is going to demoralize the ever-loving fuck out of you. And then we're going to leave a gun in the room. And if you don't kill yourself, we won't take your badge.
And that's the world according to Mark.
Hey, man. Like honestly, you know, like John sounds like the disapproving father more kids need these days.
Or at the very least, the sterner father figure.
Yeah, like he just has the thunder in the pipes where you're like, oh man, I fucked up. Like how many people would fuck up less if there was like a John St. John box that just like went off whenever they were a shitty person online or in person even. You know, like you fucking kick a puppy and immediately it's his voice just screaming at you like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why would you kick that puppy? It wasn't doing anything to you.
Yeah. I don't know. That's sort of like the Arlie Ermey argument. I mean, it's like him or Arlie Ermey as, you know, Gunnery Sergeant Hartman just screaming at you.
You could have a whole line of squawk boxes that just yell at you for being a shitty person. John, Arlie Ermey, J.K. Simmons.
Just like the long list of people. Or, like, Al Pacino just screaming at you.
No, nobody can take Pacino screaming at him seriously. They'll just giggle themselves to death.
I know, but, like, you know what they're doing while they're giggling? Not being a shitty person.
Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe that's what it is. That there are so many shitty people out there. What they really need in their lives is laughter and not necessarily at the expense of others.
Yeah, it's just like just screaming at this funny Italian guy pretending to be a Cuban.
Dear God. I mean, yeah. Like that's something that easily could sell on ThinkGeek. The stop fucking up squawk box. Get it in one of three flavors: J.K. Simmons, Arlie Ermey, or John St. John.
It's like, you know, the new startup companies that start like mailing like glitter bombs and like dicks to your enemies.
Yeah.
All they got to do is just like put in like a little sound clip, like those e-cards, like those little cards that have a little sound clip when you open them. When you open the package, it's just like Arlie Ermey's like, "How tall are you, private? I didn't know they stack shit that high."
Yeah, see, if the glitter bomb came with, like, as soon as the box opened, it just starts yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
Then because when I first heard about the glitter bomb, I was like, oh my God, that is so retarded. But, you know, if it, like, opened up and bombs glitter and it's yelling at you, now that's a fucking prank. because you're already on your ass surprised that you just got annihilated with what looks like minced stripper. And on top of that, this cardboard box is screaming at you.
You're a worthless human being. You're an absolute disgrace.
Or you could pay extra to make sure that the message is specifically custom. You know, like, I know you were the one who keyed my car, you know.
And like, they already got pay celebrities to record voiceover for Garmin and other sat navs. So why not for this most noble of projects.
Yeah, the problem is though, and I mean, like, the problem is that there's no check system for that sort of thing. So, of course, anybody can send anybody one of these horrible fucking packages, regardless of whether or not anything was actually terribly done to them. Like, there are plenty of people I would send a glitter bomb to, abso-fucking-lutely. But I couldn't do it I personally couldn't do it just because it's a boy who cried wolf situation. Like, anybody can send one of those. So someone can send one of those simply to be a dick. So that really does invalidate the existence of, or it invalidates the piety of the glitter bomb.
It invalidates like the retributive nature of this startup. But I keep coming back to this idea that there needs to be, like, actually, I want to come back to what you were talking about, like, more candid voice actors and conventions. I want to go back to when I was back in Florida, I think back in September, and
MythiCon.
Oh, yes, at MythiCon, when I had made acquaintance with Damian Clark and God, I'm blanking on his name, but the story's not really about them. The story's kind of about, I had the panel right after, and I was just kind of hanging in the back waiting for him to finish and, you know, say thank you for your time and then just kind of walk out and sulk somewhere. And and I was kind of half listening to the questions he was being asked, and I kept noticing, like, some weird affectations of stuff. It was like he would take any chance to try to kind of bump himself up, as it were. Like, he said, like, right now I'll let that voice acting behind me, and now I'm a musician. I've opened for, and then he starts name dropping all these bands he's apparently opened for, which I kind of like, really? You opened for them? It's like, all right, dude, I'm not here to say you didn't, but you're at a Florida convention in September. Yeah, sure, you did. And I just keep coming back to that, like, wow, like, how much more bomb would it be if he would actually kind of own up to the fact that he really is kind of bitter, and he starts being like really bitter towards everyone else. So he starts being like Dennis Leary, just being angry at people.
That's not really the candid nature that I'm talking about. You know, like, it's like, nobody wants a bitter person on stage. Like, I mean, all by itself, just because you name drop specifically who this is about, I have to mute it in the fucking post edit. So thanks for that.
we'll blank the name.
But, you know, specifically, no matter who it is that you run into, I mean, like, the sound of the answers vary, but the answers generally tend to be the same. You know, like, everybody has a slightly different spin on, you know, like, whatever their stories happen to be, but there starts to become a lot of common denominators, and that's just because everybody's afraid to piss everybody off. You know, like, candor doesn't exist. I mean, there's, you know, like, there's the fear that it's not diplomatic, or that it might get them in trouble, or it might get someone else in trouble, and I'm like, I get that. But I think that, like, for instance, you know, the whole, how did you get into voice acting question, the question that plagues all conventions everywhere, despite the fact that the information itself is readily available on Google and now centralized, thanks to D. Bradley Baker. Thank you, Mr. Baker. You know, there's so many people on the con circuit in terms of voice actors, and yet they all seem to be like the same person sometimes, because there's this generalized fear of like, well, you know, the best thing that I can do is kind of reel it back and, you know, like water down this story or this story. And eventually, you know, like everybody's just drinking this watered down Kool-Aid of like, oh, well, this is, you know, this is the standardized experience of voiceover. And really, it's not. There, you know, like crazy things happen in the booth. You know, like you're by yourself with a director who, you know, more often than not, you actually know. And, you know, like things get said, things get done, fun things happen. You'll never know. And the reason why is because oftentimes they consider those things to be like, it's too hot for conventions. And even during the adult panels, like I really do think that the 12 o'clock panel was like almost spawned as a decompression space for con guests, if only so that they can, you know, go full Carlin at the end of the day, because you really do get super fucking backed up with these little white lies that you tell, you know.
And yeah, and everyone's afraid to basically just step on toes, which is the reason why Mark will be censoring the name that I mentioned. But
well, know, I generally just don't need anybody. Like, I don't need some busybody fucking rolling over to so and so and being like, "You said this about you," because there's always somebody. You know, I did Real Voice Act as a Genius so long ago, and that got me in trouble. And I'm just like, who had the amount of time to find me, to find this, find me, find the person involved, get them involved, have them find someone who knows me to call me so that they could get my information so that they could talk to me? And I'm just like, and it's all because of one fucking worthless busybody fuck who's trying to gain the favor of someone that they think is important.
And that's, you know, all right. That in of itself is, you know, that's reason enough. I mean, if I don't necessarily care if I wind up pissing off this person, but I just don't need, like you said, it's probably for the best that we avoid that situation. Although it's funny enough that you bring up Real Voice Actors of Genius, because I have a feeling that not a lot of our listeners know what the hell that is.
Because it was forever ago, thank God. And it's long gone.
Only safe within the annals of our hard drives.
Yep. Mm. And that is where it's going to stay. Like, that is chapter of my life closed.
Which I wish you would open again sometimes, because that was really freaking hilarious.
Yeah, but, you know, it was born of a me that was angrier at completely different things at the time. Like, I had a talk with someone earlier in the day where she had asked me, you know, like, do you just not give a fuck all the time? And I said, no, I do give a fuck. I give a fuck enough that I, you know, like, I care to self-audit. And I personally care enough that, you know, like, if I really am fucking up, and, you know, like, then I can objectively say I'm fucking up and try and change that behavior. But as far as, you know, people who may or may not lay into me for, you know, whatever their personal reasons are, you know, like, I can't be bothered to give a fuck about them, because it's like, I'm not actively hurting you. And, you know, I feel the same way about Anime Abandon. You know, like, we write things that we both think are funny, and sometimes we write jokes that are specifically for us. Sometimes we write jokes specifically for one person in the audience, hopefully. And
Baron Praxis joke, that guy who got it.
Yeah, but the Baron Praxis joke was for the off chance that one person played Jack 2 in the audience. And then the rest we write for everybody else. And when someone comes down on us and says, you know, like, Inuyasha this, or fucking Violence Jack that, or what the fuck ever, I'm just sitting here like, you know what? The time of life is finite, and I don't know about you, but I'm gonna die. So I spent that time helping my friend make something that we both thought was funny. You spent that time writing a comment on the internet to excise your fucking demon of being personally offended by what the fuck ever. You know, like, I really do think that, objectively speaking, I can say that my time was better spent. Like, my time was better spent pissing you off than you being pissed off.
Yeah, that's really what it all comes down to. But again, I think that's a much more healthy way of looking at writing these episodes. I mean, there's a reason why we haven't seen floating Vic Mignogna's head return.
Yeah, which generally speaking is just because it's like, okay, it was a joke we did once and we never need to do it again.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I still could look at that and laugh my ass off. And I think there's a part of you that still can. But right now, our visibility is such that we can't get away with doing that to anyone else.
Well, yeah, because there's one reviewer who's like Evangelion obsessed, doesn't like anything that we did with Ava. Personally, he doesn't like the rebuild movies, and for some really, I can't fathom it reason, hates Bryce Papenbrook, who's an awesome dude. And I'm just sitting here like, so you're trying to be visible, and part of your visibility is that you hate Papenbrook for what seems like no reason. And you want to be, like, you want that attached to your brand? You know, and, like, and me personally, like, as far as our brand goes, I don't want it attached to our brand that we particularly hate anybody. Because hate takes time. I don't have time. Not to waste like that. Real hate takes time.
We'll take the piss out of anyone who deserves it. There's a reason why we kind of paid special attention to Mr. O'Donnell in the MD Geist review.
Yeah, like, we'll take shots of John O'Donnell. Like, why the fuck not? You know, like, we make fun of A-Bear. A-Bear's a friend of the show. We make fun of Bill. Bill's been on the show. You know, like, we do these things. And, you know, like, some of it's just in good fun and a little bit of humor, and some of it's, you know, just like turn the screws a little bit. But, you know, like, that's kind of the benefit of being new media. Now, being industry, there's always that feeling of, like, one of the best quotes I've ever heard is, the best actor with a bad attitude is the best actor not working. And, you know, like, they're like, that's so, it's so on point, but it's also so vague, because what people perceive as a bad attitude is so subjective. So, you know, like, I can make an enemy out of somebody without having said more than five words to them. And it's like, okay, you know, like, I can't sit on a panel. I always, like, when Bill, Greg and I do the VO workshop, I apply what my friend Rob called the good cop, bad cop, worst cop theory. So one of them plays good cop, one of them plays bad cop. And if, you know, if there's really a problem that we're running into in the middle of a workshop, then I'll just go straight fucking renegade. And the conventional thinking is that, like, you shouldn't do that because you're wearing a guest badge and you're representative of the con. It's like, no, I'm a guest of the con. I'm not representative of the con. I don't represent the organization, and someone's fucking up. So the thing is that, you know, like, they'll take a badge for a number of reasons, but they won't take a badge for somebody just being an asshole in the audience. So since I know that I'm going to have to deal with this person periodically throughout a weekend, I'd just rather crush their spirit smack in the middle of my panel and make everybody go, did he just say that? Did that just happen? You know, as opposed to, you know, just being this passive person who just kind of deals with it like, oh, yeah, I'm the voice actor with the guest badge. I can take it on the chin. It's like, yeah, I am the voice actor with the guest badge. I can take it on the chin. It doesn't mean that I have to, because, you know, everybody's going to a con to have a good time. Someone's actively trying to make sure that I'm not having a good time, or that any voice guest is not having a good time. And it should be the right of that voice guest or new media guest or music guest or comic guest to take the absolute ever-loving piss out of that person until they cry.
And let's face facts, you'd play that role very well.
You know, like, I have no delusion about the fact that I don't get along in pleasant company. I have no delusions about the fact that I am just kind of walking around renegade. Does that mean that I don't give a fuck? No, I absolutely give a fuck. If I didn't give a fuck, then there'd be violence involved.
And you wouldn't be here right now talking to me on this lovely podcast of ours.
Yeah, like, I genuinely think that not giving a fuck is violence. Like, when you really don't care about the consequences of your actions in a completely non-confrontational, zero-tolerance world like that, that is truly not giving a fuck. Like, people look at me and they practically accuse me of being a nihilist. You know, and I'm just like, why? Like where do you get that from? I mean, there's just a lot of things that, you know, like, I can't be bothered to care about, nor can you, nor can anyone on Channel Awesome, nor can any of our audience in their daily lives. There are plenty of people that you just fucking whiff right by and you just don't take their shit. Or at least I would hope that you have the self-confidence to whiff right by and don't take their shit, because you don't need to take anybody's shit, especially if it's undeserved.
Especially if it's on the freaking internet.
Yeah. You know, like I wish that we lived in a more consequence-oriented society right now, because as far as zero tolerance goes and fucking anti-bullying and all this other shit, we live in a world that is made by douchebags for douchebags, because in a world with no consequence, douchebags prevail. Like, I fear raising children in this environment. Like, no.
That is not good. But trying to steer the conversation to something a little bit more that happened a little bit more recently, and I want to share this story with all of my listeners, our listeners, I should say. You are not a football person, you're not a sports person, but I believe that you are, above all else, a schadenfreudenistic person.
Maybe.
And with this situation calls for it. And when the world's worst football fandom is in agony, you kind of have to smile to yourself just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Hey, man, I'm just glad I wasn't the Eagles. Because then I would have had to deal with screaming on my block, and I just don't want any part of that.
No. I mean, like, you can take pleasure in the knowledge that although Philly sports fans are realistically some of the worst fans, you know, just generally speaking, Seattle Seahawks fans are by far the most annoying, obnoxious people, because they exhibit all the, you know, like the same kind of behaviors that Philly fans are known for, except they have an arrogance about it. It's like they're loud, obnoxious assholes, just like the Philly fans, but now they're like, of course we're loud and obnoxious. That's what the 12th man is all about. It's like, fuck you. Just fucking fuck you, 12th man bullshit. But I'm so glad that all of their screams and triumphs and cheers were stuffed down their throats when their golden child of a quarterback decided to throw a inside slant pass when he had beast mode ready to run it up the gut for 1 yard to win the game, but instead threw it away to the Patriots for an intercepted win. And not only that. There was still 20 seconds left on the clock. They still could conceivably win the game if they forced Tom Brady to get out of the end zone so they wouldn't take a safety. But what did they do? No, they started roughhousing and punching the Patriots. And so they got a 15-yard penalty. So, like, now all they had to do was victory formation and take a knee. Way to fucking go, Seahawks. Way to fucking go to shoot yourself in the foot and ruin for a repeat. It could not have happened to a better team.
And are you still talking?
Yeah, I'm still fucking talking.
Oh, okay. But here, keep going.
I like how responsive you are to this conversation.
I got nothing. Like, I genuinely, like, this Super Bowl produced no trailers. It produced no funny commercials. It doesn't involve a team I know the name of other than the Patriots. So
I was about to say that the reason why I'm telling this story is because of my dad. And my dad is a very taciturn, very level-headed dude. He says a lot of dorky things and a lot of things that aren't funny, and I just kind of, like, my way through him. But, like, most of the time, he's the most amiable, easy-to-get-along-with guy. I mean, like, Mark loves him because of that, because of all of that. But for one glorious minute, he hates, or some back of information on this, he fucking hates Pete Carroll, the head coach for the Seahawks, hates him with a passion. And when that happened, when the Patriots intercepted that pass and effectively won the game, he leapt from his chair, let out a cackle like a nightmarish demon, and flipped off the television with the exuberance of a child on Christmas. He literally gained 4 years of life from that game and Pete Carroll's misery. It's like he was a life vampire, sucking the joy from all of Seattle and Pete Carroll so he might live another century.
Really?
Yes, really. I have never seen my dad that happy. I don't think he was that happy when he saw the Giants win the World Series. That's how much he hates Pete Carroll. Ugh.
I really wish that I could do sports. I mean, I tried as a kid to connect with my mom through sports because she's not very nerdy. So, of course, you want to, you know, get along with your mom, her being the only parent in your life. And, you know, I just couldn't do it. I remember distinctly trying to sit and watch football, baseball, basketball, whether just could not give a shit. And now in my adult life, you know, like, you know, there are people in my Twitter feed that are like, "We get it, nerds. You don't like sports." And I'm sitting here like, yeah, we get it. You like sports, so that way you can get along with the people around you and not have to deal with how it is that you actually are. But you know, I reserve my right to not like sports. Now, like, whether or not you're vocal about it, I mean, there's just a high baseline of people that don't like, don't want to understand sports, don't find them entertaining, find them more fun to play than to watch, especially baseball. And, you know, I get that baseball is a thinking man's game, and it absolutely is, and I'll never take that away from it. But baseball is crushingly boring to watch. And I joke with you and I say, like, oh, God, Bennett, everything is beautiful about you, except that. but, you know, like, I'll never take that away from you. It just means that there's one thing that you talk at me about instead of to me about.
And I have to admit that it's frustrating because I can't really find anyone that I know well that I can talk, you know, a lot about it. I just kind of have to catch you on a good day. It's like, oh, this happened and then this happened. And every once in a while I say something that kind of catches your fancy, not because of the sport, but because there's an interesting story behind it and you can appreciate the story. So when I find that angle, and I'm very, very happy. But while we're talking about the subject about nerds not liking sports, can we put a moratorium on calling it sports ball?
It wasn't funny. Sports ball or the hand superb egg. Owl or hand egg or...
You're like, that is... It wasn't funny the fucking first time around. And don't exhibit the same behavior of the jocks that used to make fun of you for playing Magic the Gathering during recess, okay?
Yeah, how about that sports team...
Yeah, that's... How about that local sports team? No. Listen, that is lazy at best and just really diminutive when you really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I... You know, I don't go around to people and be... And just say, like, oh, sports are stupid. You're stupid for liking sports. As I did, you know, like, Madden is stupid and you're stupid for liking Madden. But... And that's just because, like, that's, like, really a game every year? How many improvements can you really get every year? Especially now when you get DLC fucking roster changes.
If you get the roster changes, updated stats and such over DLC, there really is no need.
There's no need for Madden every year anymore. There just fucking isn't.
Gotta keep that licensing deal with the NFL, though.
And before someone tells, like, there's new players. It's like, yeah, because they totally can't work new players in via DLC. Nope, can't crunch those numbers.
Well, here's some good news, nerds. Because of that, there can never ever be on-disc DLC.
God, don't start. Don't start.
I know I'm not gonna start. I just knew it was a sore point for you. So.
It is a sore point for me, and it continues to be a sore point for me. Thankfully, no one's brought it up, and people are fucking leaving it alone for now. But Jesus Christ, you know. I just can't stand that fucking entitlement. I really can't.
Well, we're nerds. I mean, we're kind of raised on the belief that, or at least we got through life believing that we had to be better than all the shit that we were shoveled onto us over the years. That we were above that. That we are not as worthless or as stupid as everyone else thought we are because we liked a certain thing. And how can you think that way and not arrive to the conclusion that life owes you something?
Easily, by not being a douchebag. Like, I wake up every day and I ask myself, am I a douchebag? No. You know, and it's just by virtue of asking that question that I'm doing more than the average person.
It's like, am I a douchebag? And, well, the fact that I asked my question, at least I have some self-realization. I mean, at worst, I'm an asshole, but not a douchebag.
Yeah, you know, it's just a little bit of self-auditing every day. Am I a terrible person? Am I a douchebag? Just by asking those things. It already makes you better than the average person walking around who is completely fucking self-assured and cannot be convinced of otherwise.
You know, there's only a fine line between the difference between self-assurance and delusional.
Yeah, I suppose so. But fuck it. So, there is some sad news today.
Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of woke up to it. And
so did I.
It was a good member of the new media landscape has unfortunately passed away. Monty Ohm, the story says that he had a very, very nasty allergic reaction during a routine medical procedure that had put him in a coma for the last 10 days, and which eventually took his life.
So we please do join us in wishing his family well, wishing Rooster Teeth continued success without a significant part of their team, obviously. And let's hope that we don't lose any more small media people this year, because I saw that, like, that's the third one in so many months. It's like, Jesus. So that is incredibly sad, and Monty was an inspiration to me to do what it is that we're doing now with this project, and that's the most you're going to get out of me for now. But it was really surreal to wake up to. So yeah. I'm sorry he's gone.
And we will be providing a link underneath the episode to the GoFundMe, which is providing funds for his family and friends, for his medical bills, and for funeral expenses, and for just any donation that you can make to this very, very worthy cause will be counted and appreciated.
Now, we're not going to leave you on something that sad, because that would be the terrible thing to do. So, it's time for Electric Weasels Are Living in Detroit!
Oh, God, that was so terrible!
I can't. Like, we can't leave it there. It's not the cool thing to do. So, there's a new dethroning moment on TV Tropes, which is head-scratchy.
Yeah, it really is, but... Can I just say, you didn't say it right. It's not electric weasels are living in my shorts. You got to say it like this. Electric weasels are living in my shorts!
Yeah, well, then you can say it like that and tear your throat up. Meanwhile, I still have to do auditions.
All right. This is a dethroning moment, which is a new, like we said, was a new feature on the recently revamped TV Tropes. And I like this. I like this feature because in order for you to list your dethroning moment, you have to sign it with a username. Now, you could just completely make up a new username just to put it there, but you cannot anonymous it. You have to own up to it. You have to own up to your criticisms, which is why I have absolutely no problem with it. I really don't. I really have no problem with anyone listing whatever shit they want to post up on here. I really don't. As long as it comes from a real, genuine place. Not just like, oh, Bennett's a faggot. And especially if we could get moments like this. This is from, I'm not going to say the name. If you want to look it up, you can find it for yourself. But here is this person's dethroning moment. I'm going to keep following Sage for a bit, but if I give up on him, I'm tracing it to this, so I'm putting it up. Well, thank you for that. His Inuyasha review has him go into Bad Boys at length, rather than focus on unfortunate implications or express some personal discomfort with the trope. He ranted about how women needed to stop being interested in Bad Boys. Now, I did not say that. What I said was...
Just read it.
All right.
And you can rebut after.
Okay. This coming from the guy who coined the term Valkyrie bitch and affectionately referred to one as ball crushing. The hypocrisy from this hurt. It didn't help that there were some interesting ideas in the color BDSM metaphor for their relationship dynamic, but he doesn't explore it enough, and so it seems shaky, semicolon. If he'd not wasted time ranting to grown women to shame them for their attraction, he might have fleshed out what makes an interesting premise for a dynamic, if one the show never really explores. Now, I'm not quite sure how much she wanted me to explore what I was talking about as far as that color BDSM metaphor she brought up, but that was a pretty much a 3-4 minute digression from the review proper. If she wanted me to create an entire episode about it, I don't have that kind of time. All right, and two, going back to the rebuttal I was going to make before you reminded me to get back on track here, I never said that women need to stop being attracted to bad boys. What I said was that stories need to stop fetishizing it. And I believe I said it's fine when it's kept in the fictional, kept in fictional terms. But when it happens in real life, it's downright creepy, bringing up that whole woman who has a crush on the Aurora killer.
Yeah,
that's where my problem with it comes in. When it gets into real life. And I wasn't fucking kink-shaming. If you thought I was kink-shaming anyone, then, you know, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, like, if people knew what the kind of shit I was into, I would have no leg to stand on when I was to say what was kink-shaming or not.
Honestly, like, like, I mean, I could see where this person might have kind of fallen off the cliff, but, you know, like, okay, just specifically about Valkyrie bitches.
I think that's where we need to hammer home the fact.
All when right, we put Valkyrie bitches on a pedestal, and you'll notice now if there were specifically a corollary between Valkyrie bitches and bad boys, every Love Hina review would be stellar. Love Hina would be on a like we'd fucking emblazon it in fucking gold and just like prominently display it on the set.
It's like being a Valkyrie bitch doesn't mean being like, you know, being strong enough to beat up a guy just to beat up a guy. That's not what being a Valkyrie bitch is all about. That's not at all what it is about. What being a Valkyrie bitch, what to me and Mark, being a Valkyrie bitch means being able to take charge of the situation at hand.
Or yeah, fucking take charge, kick some ass if you gotta. You know, you're not like you're just not like, and I know that it's kind of hard to justify Ryoko as a Valkyrie bitch because, you know, she's doing so many things in the service of her love of Tenchi. And, you know, fucking Tenchi is absolutely a glut with what we'd consider Valkyrie bitches, even though they're all kind of doing what they're doing in the hopes of being specifically with this one dude. But, you know, like that's a joke, you know, like that's their reality, but it's also simultaneously being played up as a joke. There's still plenty of individual moments that every character has, even fucking Sasami and Ryo Oki, where you're kind of like, shit, that was awesome.
Exactly. And let's also really break down to brass tacks this notion of like, oh, what they're doing is just for the attention of a man. Well, doesn't that show like some agency on their behalf? Like they're not waiting to, you know, for them to come to him to come to them. They're actively trying to get his attention. Like they're trying to earn his love, often with failure, which is where the comedy comes in. But they, you know, like when you look at that, it's like, how can you try to take that away from like actual characters with agency and proactive characters?
Yeah. So like we hold Valkyrie bitch on a pedestal because it's not about beating the crap out of the nearest, you know, slightly weaker willed dude or the nearest fucking huge dude. It's like, yeah, you took down the mountain. No, it's about, you know, like you look at this chick and it's like, oh, I could have a drink with her. Oh, she could be a friend. Oh, she's just really impressive. If I had daughters, I would absolutely say, watch this. You know,
it's not about saying like being a girly girl, if you want to be a girly girl, is anything shameful either. It's the notion that you can be both. That you could be anywhere within that spectrum. You could be Revy from frickin' Black Lagoon.
But even Revy had kind of a feminine moment. It was a scary feminine moment in Roberta's Blood Trail. But she did have softer moments scattered throughout where it's like no, she's not a fucking Terminator. You know, she's like specifically, you know, fucking Roberta from Black Lagoon. You know, like she, like they sell her as this Terminator, but she's so complex as a character, you know, emotionally. And you can really kind of get behind that. You're not supposed to, because, you know, technically she's the villain of the day, or for those couple of episodes, but she really is someone who you can be, who you almost really would, like, sit your daughter down and go, like, this is Roberta, pay attention.
You know? Oh, wait till she's about 12 or 13 before you let her watch Black Lagoon. At the very least.
We didn't.
No. Like, Black Lagoon, I was 17 when Black Lagoon came out, okay?
I'm just saying, like violent anime in general?
Okay,
early
yeah.
Early exposure is best exposure.
I know, but that's not to the benefit of, like, the only reason why we were able to watch all the kind of violent crap we watch was because our parents didn't know any better.
Well,
We know better.
Yeah, we know, like, I don't know, is that knowing better? You know, well, I would absolutely love, like, if I ever had kids, to show them violent anime and just be like, here you go. This is what daddy watched when he was your age. You know, start up with Speed Racer and then dump them straight into Dragon Ball and then move on to fucking Armitage or something.
I was hoping if you were going to go that extreme, like, okay, here's Pokemon, here's Dragon Ball Z, here's Angel Cop.
Yeah. You know, like what they used to show on fucking Sci-Fi Channel. Like, because you got to remember, folks, that every time you go, oh, man, that was on Sci-Fi Channel, like, Bennett didn't watch that stuff. I did. So I'm suggesting those things for you guys, the guys who had the same television watching experience that I did, while Bennett's just sitting back going, like, I didn't get to see this as a kid. This is interesting. You know, when we did the fucking Eyes of Mars and, when we did Ape Man After.
Yeah. And I find those times that I'm able to look at those animes as a real chance to, you know, find out about the past that could have been. You know, if I happened to live in an area that had the proper cable. Mm. Like, I didn't get sci-fi until I was 14 or 15. I didn't get Cartoon Network until I was, like, 12. And that, you know, that just, you know, speaks to you on a level of, wow, so the only anime you ever saw that was on television was either Pokemon or Dragon Ball.
Yeah, because
or
that
Yu-Gi-Oh.
That was well after they had finished airing Twilight of the Cockroaches.
Yeah, so, like, there was a lot that I missed. Although, I did, like, I never get tired of telling the story that I saw The Running Man on Liquid Television when I was 4.
Oh, Liquid Television.
Oh, man.
The good old days. I don't know, man. Like, it just seems to be, you know, and here's my get off my lawn moment. But after all that shit about kids don't know who the fuck Missy Elliott is, I'm like, that's it. It just proves it. That we need to fucking scrub this generation clean, wipe them all out, and spawn a new generation that is aware of the shit that happened before it. You know, when it used to be that when you were a child of the 90s, you were aware of the 80s. When you're a child of the 80s, you were aware of the 70s, and so on and so forth. You know, within that past, you know, like 60, 70 years. But now, you know, their previous history is exactly 2 seconds fucking long. And that is not conducive to, because you could say, like, oh, well, all the things that they're not seeing, they can fill their brains with other things. Yeah, cat videos. Cat videos and fucking Let's Plays. That's what they're filling their brains to capacity with now. Oh, my God. Hate these kids.
Hate these fucking kids. I don't know, like, is it just our generation that we seem to be in love with the aspect of nostalgia, even if it really isn't our own nostalgia?
I don't know. I mean, like, a generation without nostalgia, what is that? Like, a generation that has no history. You know, what does that mean when they grow up if they have no sense of anything being cool when they were younger?
Well, then again, that's just maybe the generation gap talking. Like, we remember a time when there was VCRs and no internet.
Yeah, VCRs, no internet, cassette tapes, Walkmans. Like, see, the thing is that, you know, like, I can still look at the things today and go, like, oh, well, that's really cool. And I don't begrudge the current generation for the things that they have that I didn't, because, you know, I would have loved to have the things that I have now when I was a kid. The world that could have been opened up to me. But, you know, simultaneously, it's also extremely socially dangerous because, you know, you're not safe anywhere and kids are fucking terrible.
And Coca-Cola's making terrible commercials, trying to opt in on the cyberbullying. It's like, oh, God, Coca-Cola. Just for that commercial, I'm going to find some random teenager on Facebook and call him gay.
You know, like, I don't begrudge them for the things that they have that I didn't. I absolutely hate them, though, for the fact that they have no sense of what came before them 30 seconds ago. You know, that's what fucking kills me dead, is that they have no sense of what happened even 5 years before them.
And that's one of the most common comments that I get ever since I brought Anime Abandoned to YouTube was like, why does he keep talking about anime I never heard of? It's like, because you've never fucking heard of it.
Yeah, that's now sit why. Down, like, now sit down and watch it. Like let me clue you into something. Time was happening before you were born.
I know.
Like, here's like, I know it's a strange concept, but time was happening before you were born, and in that time, shit happened. You know, like things weren't computer colored, things weren't super high poly awesome graphics and normal maps and shit, but good stuff happened before you were born. So sit down and like important stuff. So sit down, pay attention.
Men are talking.
I used to say that to Curb a lot. He's just hardcore Nintendo. Like, he won't play anything else but Nintendo games, really. And whenever it is that he would jump into a conversation that, like, multiple friends of ours were having, and I was having with them, and he would try to talk about how he relates to that as a Nintendo fan, I'd always tell him, shut up, Curb, the real gamers are talking. It was a terrible thing to constantly say, but it was, like, because I was just always trying to encourage him, like, dude, there is so much that you're missing. With that, like, beautiful games that you are missing, like, and you tell me, you know, like, he's like, he tells me, you know, like, oh, like, my favorite RPG is Super Mario RPG, and I'm sitting here like, because that's the only one you played.
At least he played one. I can't really fault him for, like, giving an entire genre a chance, but
Having that be the only one and just having, like, a wholesale disinterest because it's outside of his comfort zone, which, you know, is something that I apply to most people. It's like just because it's outside of your comfort zone, you don't even want to give it a fucking chance. Like, I hate horror games. I don't like being scared, but I played 3 different Resident Evil games. I played through them all. You know, like, I don't want to be fucking scared. I don't want tank controls and a camera that doesn't fucking work. But you want to know what? I started with Code Veronica, and then I moved on to fucking Resident Evil 4, and then I moved on to Resident Evil 5. Like, that's, like, I moved outside of my comfort zone, and I had great experiences in all 3 of those games. You know, like, I'm not going, like, I'm, like, these super horror games now. I'm like, no! No thanks! PT can suck a dick!
Oh, he heard my reaction when I was playing PT. I only had one holy shit moment, and that was a jump scare, of course. But, oh, God, Mark sounded really, really uncomfortable just being in a room with that audio around.
I don't want it. Like, that's, you want to know what? The best compliment I can give your horror game is that it is too scary for me to play. That's it. Your sound design and your level design and your textures are so good that I don't even want to play it.
It's like,
well done.
Way to go.
Yeah. Like, that's the best compliment I can give. Like, congratulations. You made a game so fucking scary, I don't want to fucking play it. Like, there's no Leon gets the Magnum moment. You know, like, that was the problem with the first Dead Space, why so many people never finished it, was because that game was straight vertical climb. Fuck you. You know, no BFG, no Magnum. You know, it was just, you will get what we give you and play this game. Great. Awesome. I think I'm going to watch the Let's Play.
Without any annoying-ass PewDiePie commentary over it, I assume.
Yeah, I ended up watching the Let's Play of it with no commentary, and the same thing for Dead Space 2, because I was like, oh, well. But Dead Space 3, you know, like, when it's you and me, it's like, okay, we can be scared together. That's more fun than me being scared all by myself with my cat.
Hey, oh, God, I remember a playthrough of that. You happened to play the guy who was hallucinating, and I was just Isaac, who's just been there, done that. So, like, you were like, oh, my God, Bennett, there are balloons and hats.
Balloons and clowns. Oh, God, and fucking Nutcracker Man. Oh, God, that was awesome.
And you were just like remarking about all of this, and I'm just looking at this empty corridors like, wow, that sounds real fun. Wish I could see it.
See, the one thing that I wanted out of Dead Space 3, though, was asymmetrical hallucinations. Because it wouldn't have made sense if they had dual hallucinations. So if they had asymmetrical hallucinations, that would have been fucking amazing. And they did it, and that was really cool. But the one thing that I really did want on top of that was I wanted for there to be like a hallucinatory moment where, like, smack in the middle of all the enemies that they're throwing at you during the hallucination, one of them is your partner.
Like, no, that would have been evil.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been amazingly evil, but I'm...
Because like, you've got to survive, and I've got to survive the hallucination, and, like, because if they don't make it obvious, it's like, look, there's one guy, and he's fucking shooting at you. Like, because if it makes it so that, like, you're not shooting at me, but I'm shooting at you, and you're taking damage, so I think you're an enemy shooting at me, then I have to make this decision, because right now... What the logic is that I have to kill all the enemies in this hallucination before I go to the marker. But what if it's that I could just go to the marker? So then they trick me into thinking that I can't go to the marker until I kill this guy who's my partner. Ideas for Dead Space 4.
I don't think that we'll see a Dead Space 4 anytime soon. A lot of people did not like Dead Space 3.
I really hope that they don't fucking cow to all the people. It's not a scary co-op. Well, action-oriented. Fuck it, man.
You know, I'll agree on that part. Like, it's hard to be scared when you're not alone. But, you know, with the direction they were taking, at least it was very thrilling. It was made for a very memorable action game experience.
Yeah, it wasn't scary. It was tense. Like, that's what we specifically said in the review.
And that's, you know, that's good. That's bringing out an emotion from the player. And that's... And you can't fault a game for, like, making you feel something.
No. I know the feelings I don't want to feel. And, you know, just to bring it back, I feel the same way about fucking Kingdom Hearts. Like, I hate Kingdom Hearts. I hate King... Like, but what I hate more than Kingdom Hearts is people who love Kingdom Hearts. Because they seem to think it's the best action RPG ever, and they've never heard of Brave Friends of Musashi, Threads of Fate, or Vagrant Story. And, when Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 were out, and they were like, the truth... You know, like, oh my god, Kingdom Hearts is the best thing ever. Have you ever played Brave Prince Musashi?
No.
Vagrant Story? Never heard of it. Threads of Fate?
Uh-uh.
Great. Then why don't you go find those games and play them, and then come back and talk to me, the person who recognized that gaming was happening for more than last year.
Like, I can't really defend Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 gameplay-wise, because it's very, very simplistic gameplay.
Oh my god, is it?
And very, very clunky. However, I can't really hate the games because they did provide me good memories. They were good memories for me.
See, the thing is, though, is that, like, I know that we just fucking derailed and started going into game theory, but, me personally, like, if something sells itself as an action RPG, it better fucking be an action RPG. You know, I don't want a game where I've got one fucking attack button. Brave Fence of Musashi had two on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like plenty of games, action RPGs, had two attack buttons. Like, here you go, here's one attack button. And then in the second game, here's one attack button. Oh, and you get a special now. It's like, fucking shit. Really? So, you know, I want games that have visceral combat and engaging stories and, you know, can create those memorable experiences. Like Kingdom Hearts 2 is the biggest waste of potential I've ever goddamn seen in a Squeenix game. Because, you know, like, when you die and fucking King Mickey comes out like a badass maxed out, that's amazing. That makes you feel like a badass, you know?
Like you were worth saving.
You're fucking worth saving. You're worth fucking taking down all these fucking idiots. And you know, but then, you know, you're back to the shit game. So.
I mean, I keep coming back to it. It's like, no matter how I view the game, no matter how many times I view the game, it's like, logically, I know that it's not as good as I remember it being. But there's just something about it, the way it presented itself, that...
It's an amazing concept.
And it's a concept that you will never ever see in gaming again. A big license like Disney taking a chance with like this weird Japanese world full of like games that most of America has never even heard of.
Yeah, but you know, you'll never see it again, and I'll never be able to take away the fact that it's a beautiful concept that's beautifully executed. You know, Kingdom Hearts is still one of the most beautiful games, one of the top 100 most beautiful games in the history of gaming. As a series, not as any individual entry, but as a series.
And you know what? I'm going to give Kingdom Hearts 3 a chance when it comes out.
See, I haven't played a video game in more than a year, so... I accidentally retired myself from gaming because, you know, fucking Project takes precedence.
Trust me, one of these days it will all make sense to you viewers. One of these days. But it's not this day. It is not this day.
I knew you were gonna do that. God damn it.
What better way to end this podcast than with a Lord of the Rings quote? Actually, there is a better way to end this podcast. With Mark bringing us on home.
Intro music by George Sakalis, outro music by Zero Reynolds. You can follow them both on Twitter via the links below. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.